Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about ZoneMinder, a great way to watch webcams for security issues. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 496, recorded September 7th, 2018. ZoneMinder. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big project, the little project. I almost forgot my opening speech. How many times have I done this? The things you might want to play with right after this show, download, the things you may be using every day and not aware of. But this actually could be either of those. Today's project could be either of those. I'm going to welcome back my lovely and talented co-host, Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be here on a Friday at 6:30 here Central Time. What in the world is up with that?
Well, for me, it's a Friday at 4:30. So here's what happened. Well, first, you're always talking to us from someplace I flew over on Monday, right? So like Oklahoma?
Yes. You probably did. I'm here in southwestern Oklahoma.
I was on my way back from DragonCon in Atlanta to Portland. So obviously I flew over probably one of those states, at least the ones nearby. So anyway, I'm back at home this week with my somewhat wonky occasionally Wi-Fi. So we'll see how that works. Anyway, yeah, so let's talk about why. If you're watching the live stream, you already know that we're not taping at a normal time. If you're watching for us in your podcast feed, you're probably going, where's Floss Weekly? Where's Floss Weekly? So here's the short story of what happened. I don't want to belabor it too much. We had a guest lined up for Wednesday, and it was all set until Tuesday night. Tuesday night, probably about 4:30 in the afternoon, 4:30 in the evening my time, I got a notification, oh, he'll have to cancel. He seems to be unavailable for this week. We'll have to reschedule to something later. I won't want to say... Yes, I'll go ahead and say it. It's somebody who canceled very close to the show last time too. So, I'm a little upset by that. But that's it happens. This is how the show works. I scrambled behind the scenes, and my entire team, all my co-hosts, we all tried to find a guest for Wednesday, and we couldn't find one. So I was going to cancel the show, and then I talked to the Twit Network about it, and we decided, hey, we can tape this on Friday afternoon at 4 my time, 6:30 your time, just so we can get a show out this week, just so we can keep the schedule up. And together we all put our collective heads together, and that's how we came up with the guests for today, which is, in fact, the ZoneMinder project. ZoneMinder is a It's an integrated set of applications which provide a complete surveillance solution allowing capture, analysis, recording, and monitoring of any CCTV or security cameras. Now, we actually had ZoneMinder on back in September 25th, 2013, as somebody pointed out in the chat room. I forget who was one of the cool guys. Well, they're all cool in there. Pete Delaney, right? We actually had them on almost exactly 5 years ago, episode 266. So if you want to pause this show and go back and watch that one and then come back, you can see that I haven't really changed the way I do the show, which is pretty good, except occasionally I don't forget the opening like I just did. So this is going to be interesting because, I asked them what's happened in the 5 years since then. And they said, there's been quite a bit of work in 5 years. So definitely a lot to talk about. We're going to presume that you haven't seen the previous show on this episode, though, so we're going to kind of start and do the interview from scratch. And who's going to be on is going to be Andrew Bauer, who is a communication system engineer by day and open source developer by night. Oops, did I get you got the same blog twice. And Isaac Connor is also joining us. He's a ZoneMinder developer and open source video surveillance evangelist. He's located in Toronto, Canada. So he's a Canadian. Apparently things are different up there. He's a Linux open source web developer for 20 years. So what do you know about this so far, Jonathan?
Well, I think I am doing the most Floss Weekly thing possible right now. And that is, I have a ZoneMinder install set up over at the house I'm renovating, and I've got it pulled up via WireGuard. So it's meshing. The projects are meshing together. I've used ZoneMinder for quite some time, and it's a great solution for being able to have, you know, power over Ethernet cameras and all sync together into a server that can record. Really, really nifty.
Cool. Well, that sounds great. Well, we're going to bring our guests on in just a second. But before we do that, I do have an important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Let's talk about buying a home for a minute. Because of the rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days. It's causing a lot of anxiety with folks. Well, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. Here's how it works. Step one, answer a few simple questions and they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval, which gives you the strength of a cash buyer. Step three, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, they'll lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If the rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if the rates go down, your rate also drops. So either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply, based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. Let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Andrew Bauer, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting us. Glad to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I am from St. Louis, Missouri, metro area.
So you're sort of probably same time zone as Jonathan then, right? I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Oklahoma?
Yeah, pretty close.
Okay, cool.
Maybe an eight-hour drive. Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
Oh, cool, cool. Nearby. And also, let's bring on Isaac Connor. Isaac, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
So I'm in Toronto, Canada.
Okay, cool. And is that the same time zone? I'm trying to think.
No, I'm different different from Andy and 3 hours different head from you.
So we have a 3 hour or three different time zone show, which is completely irrelevant. Might as well get into the actual content of the show. So Andrew, why don't you give us the start here? What problem are you solving when you're reaching for ZoneMinder?
Wow, what problem am I solving? Well, I'm looking for it's a video surveillance app. So you start with asking yourself the question, what do you want to see? And then go from there. And so basically, if it's cars in the street, that's pretty easy. You know, you want to base your cameras. You want to buy some cameras appropriate for the situation. Just kind of go from there.
Now, cameras there's a wide variety of cameras, right? I mean, there are. I can get infrared cameras. I can get cameras that use IP technology, that use, BNC cables and stuff. Is ZoneMinder for all those?
Yeah, good question. The industry has pretty much completely shifted over to IP cameras. The old days when you had BNC connectors, that was the old analog NTSC kind of 480 lines of resolution. We've pretty much gone away from that. And now it's high resolution IP cameras. 1080p is kind of a low resolution these days, so you can get up to 2, 3, 4 megapixel with a run of the mill camera these days. And then industry standards have gotten to the point where most cameras support what's called ONVIV, and that of course allows software developers to more easily support a greater number of cameras because they're all speaking the same language now.
And so am I setting it? Is this mostly for like home security or are people using this in offices?
It does both. So what we're trying to do is to let this let the software scale. So you could do it on something as small as a Raspberry Pi. I've done that a few times myself. Really enjoy those types of projects, and scale it all the way up to like an enterprise type situation where you have multiple servers at multiple sites, and can view all the cameras from all the sites.
Now, one of the things I understand this has is really good motion detection. So I could set a trigger if something enters a particular area. Is that right?
Yes, there are all sorts of different what are called zone types. What people mostly should use are what's called an active zone, which is what you would think of. Something walks into it, into the zone you've defined it. It makes pixels move, which when it passes a certain threshold, zone miner will call that as motion. You can kind of supplement those that zone with additional zones, with a preclusive zone where you want motion, but you don't want motion if it occurs over in this particular spot over here. And so you can kind of use these different zone types to create a rule set to hopefully exclude the events you don't want to see and only record the ones you do. That's kind of an art, though. So it's kind of a process. It takes a little bit to get that right. Isaac, are you got anything else to add for that? I know I kind of skipped over some of the zone types.
Yeah, well, I mean, anyone who wants to know about all of them will have to do the research. The only other one that might be of particular notice would be a privacy zone. If you want to black something out, maybe your bedroom is in the image and you just want that blacked out. So there's that option as well. It's extremely configurable, and it is a bit of an art setting that up to only get the events that you really want to see. But that's, Zoom is very powerful, but it, as a result, can also be very complex. Honestly, most of my zones that I set up are more about reducing the areas of interest to reduce CPU usage in detecting that motion.
So let me ask, I want to start with just one simple application of how I'd use these zones and how I'd actually use this. Okay, suppose I put a camera at my front door and I wanted to only record events where someone walks up onto my first step right there in front of the front door, and I want to take video of that. And maybe as a side effect, flip on the light if it's nighttime, which is better than those normal lights because you seem to flip on whenever there's any motion. But I don't really care about like a dog running through my front yard. Is this the kind of thing I could use ZoneMinder for?
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah.
In short, yes. One thing that we don't do yet, and it'll come in a future version, is what they call object detection. Identifying that it's a dog. We don't do that yet. We're based purely on, how many pixels changed in the scene. And so you would define a zone and you would shape it around that front step. And so if somebody walked onto the front step, the alarm would happen. You wouldn't include your lawn, and so you wouldn't see the dog. The dog would cause something to happen. It wouldn't cause the recording to happen.
Unless the dog came on the porch.
Exactly.
Okay. See, I get it. I'm starting to follow this. So that's a real simple use case. But would a typical home, once you get something like this set up, are you more likely to just start throwing cameras up everywhere?
I tend to think that, once you get a couple cameras, you start to want more and more.
I can confirm this is how that works.
Yeah. But honestly, the way I started with this was I had a daughter and I wanted, instead of a crappy baby cam, I used a network camera and was recording all the time. And, the quality of that network camera was so much better than any baby cam. And now I have, I can watch all of my kids all the time. It's a little creepy probably to them, but, it's a real sound peace of mind being able to check in on the kids if you happen to be away from home or whatever. So that's the home use case. I also have a number of corporate clients that use this. And the same kind of things fall into place. You can really configure Zomo to do exactly what you want, and it's a lot more powerful than a lot of the more traditional security video CCTV systems that still people pay a lot of money for, but aren't really all that great.
Wow. So let's talk about you as people as well, because that's what the show is about, is the people that are doing open source. Andrew, how did you get involved with the project and why?
Well, I had actually, I picked up video surveillance kind of as a hobby, and that's actually how I got my day job. So I just thought it was interesting. Didn't know a whole lot about it, but I'm kind of the guy that likes to figure out how things work. And so it just kind of, you know, I started from ground zero and kind of built up over the years. And so that was maybe over 10 years ago. In 2002, I actually took that to my job interview and kind of showed my, you know, future boss. I said, hey, look, you know, I'm kind of doing this already. And that kind of landed me my job as a systems engineer designing medium to large commercial video surveillance systems that, by day. So it's kind of interesting. I find it interesting that my hobby and my day job kind of, they blend together.
Okay. And Isaac, same question?
Yeah, well, I'm working as a Linux open source solution provider for a number of clients. And one day they came to me and they said their video system was not working. It was crap. And they didn't want to spend $30,000 to have someone come in and look at it. So they asked me to look at it. I installed Linux, booted from a USB drive on the CCTV capture system. And lo and behold, it supported all of the capture devices that were in there because they were Pico 2000 capture cards, which are like the lowest basest video capture card there is. And so ZomoMinder worked great, and we never looked back. The proprietary system would, you couldn't just export video from it and anything useful. Everything was proprietary. It was crap. It ran at Windows XP. And so I installed ZomoMinder and then, you know, continued to improve. You know, I got into the world of developing it. Got involved with the development of it to make it do all the things that we wanted it to do. Is a never-ending feature list that people will want, and I certainly had lots more features that I wanted it to do.
Isaac, so you went from a Windows XP install on this old machine to a Linux install, and everything just worked? Is ZomoMinder Linux only? Yeah, imagine that. That's the truth. Everything just worked. It's a miracle. Is it Linux only, or can we run ZomoMinder on a Mac or a Windows machine?
I have compiled it for a Mac. It's a bit of tricky because there are a lot of dependencies. You've got to get into the Brew project, get MySQL installed and all the libraries. It does run on Mac. It does run on FreeBSD. I think it'll even run on the Debian new herd. but generally, we test with Linux. And there's a couple other people who make sure that it continues to work on BSDs. But every now and then we get a question, you know, why don't we support Windows? Well, this is too much work. But Linux, BSDs, even Macs, not easy to install on a Mac, though, at this time. Have done it. Does work.
Nobody's volunteered to make a Brew or I don't remember the other packager on Mac. There's another packager very similar to MacPorts.
Yeah.
Nobody's volunteered to do a Brew or MacPorts.
It's on my to-do list. The problem is that we deprecated the autoconf style of building ZomoMinder. And as near as I can tell, MacPorts only supports autoconf style building. So we kind of have to dig back out all the autoconf stuff to make that work. I may do that. It is on my to-do list. But you know, no one's funding that development, so it's at the bottom of the to-do list, unfortunately.
Yes, that is how that goes. So what language is all of this in? Is it another of the Node.js projects where everything is JavaScript top to bottom? Are you guys working in assembly? Crazy like some of the other friends we have here at Twit.
We have not gone down the Node.js route yet.
Thank you.
We're a bit of a legacy code base. We're based C++ and Perl and PHP.
Yay, Perl.
Yeah, our API is built using CakePHP. There is a lot of assembly, a lot of hand-coded assembly in there due to one of our core developers called Master the Knife. So basically those four languages. And I don't think we have any plans to change any of that anytime soon. Mostly because I don't think any of us are particularly comfortable with any other languages, especially Node.js. Maybe we should, but no plans yet this time.
Working with video feed, it's kind of processor intensive. I mean, I assume even with a bunch of hand-coded assembler, there's a pretty hard limit on how many cameras a kind of an average computer can handle. What does that look like?
Yeah, I kind of have a rule of thumb. I mean, dealing with something like a 720p camera, I get about 4 cameras per core doing motion detection as well as the H.264 decoding and all the rest. And it, once you start changing those parameters, the numbers go right out the window. We're at the moment probably mostly RAM intensive because we store a number of raw frames in RAM. For buffering and whatnot. And, you know, every time you increase the resolution, you're not doubling it, you're actually quadrupling it. So as you increase the resolution of the camera, it just consumes all your RAM really quick. And that's something that's going to probably have to change soon, but we haven't done it yet. The CPU, I mean, the motion detection is pretty CPU intensive. H.264 is decently CPU intensive. H.265 is ridiculously CPU intensive. The good news is at some point we should probably be able to get some hardware acceleration for the H.264. I was able to actually achieve it on the Raspberry Pi. So I actually have a Raspberry Pi in my house doing 4 roughly 720p video feeds in hardware, and it's not even breaking a sweat, which is kind of amazing. But it's now limited by RAM. So it just doesn't have any. I will go further. Video surveillance is not only CPU intensive and RAM intensive, it can also be IO intensive. I had a project scaling ZoneMinder up to over 800 cameras. And after 100, I had to re-architect a lot of it, database accesses and whatnot, and then I did that. And then I ran into, you know, I/O limits. It was running over a terabyte per second. So video surveillance kind of hits all three. CPU, RAM, and disk I/O.
It's a lot of bits to shovel around. Hey, so we do have a live audience, even on a Friday. And Tech Dino wants to know, what has been one of your most difficult challenges posed by an actual customer? And whichever of you want to can jump in and take that.
Posed by an actual customer. Well, we're an open source application. So if you want to mean one of our probably displaying the overhead video onto a Raspberry Pi, kind of what Isaac was just saying. So it took a little bit of figuring, but the details are escaping me right now, but that's one of mine difficult ones right there.
The Raspberry Pi has been pretty tough, but probably the most enjoyable, I would say. It's so much fun to get down on this little device and sort of figure it out and get every last little bit of performance out of it. My toughest thing was the client I just mentioned, scaling up past 100, a lot of re-architecting and learning about, you know, how to properly do things with databases to not be like, you know, scanning the table, every row in a multi-million line table just to get the little piece of information you want. There are a lot of assumptions made that fall apart really quickly. That was, I would say, the hardest. I don't think the Pi stuff is hard because it's fun and it's a lot of a matter, you know, a lot of the stuff that we need to do is about getting all the underlying libraries to have support for the things that we want to do. Right now, we're really limited with H.265. No browser will support playing H.265. Whereas with H.264, most browsers do. So we can just send the MP4 to the browser, and it'll just do the right thing. H.265, that doesn't work. So, you know, dealing with all the underlying libraries and all the other systems to sort of come up to where we need them to be is kind of the hardest thing, the workarounds for that stuff.
We've talked a lot about video, and obviously that's the focus of ZoneMinder. Is that the only, say, input that ZoneMinder uses, or is there support for audio recording? Is there support for things like door sensors? Can you pull in that kind of inputs beside video?
Yep. So right now, we can do door sensors through the ZM trigger module. Basically, it sits there and listens on a socket, which you can send messages to. Kind of a little experiment. I've got dogs in my house and thought it would be kind of neat to build a bark sensor, you know, just for giggles. Built a little threshold sensor that would send a signal over the Wi-Fi to the server every time the dog started barking, and would trigger the camera to record. So little things like that, yeah, definitely possible. We've got an API to do the same thing. So rather than use a ZM trigger, which sits there on a listening on a socket, you can send commands through HTTP as well.
And it just to as an addendum, I know Andy recently added a website, like an HTML feed as well. So if you have HTML based information feed, you can have that as an input and stick it up next to a camera, you know, video feed if they're related, which is something that I understand enterprise systems have. Well, now ZoneMinder has it too.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me, Isaac. I had sometimes I wonder if that was I was the only one that thought that might be useful. So, my case, I've got an overhead display showing the cameras around my house. I also have another open source app collecting temperature, humidity, and like a gate status. It sends me alerts to that application. That has a web front end to it. So, using this new feature that's now in our beta. Beta software, which is soon to be released, you can take an arbitrary website and make that a camera, and it's interactive too. So you can bring that up in a pane in your overhead monitor. You could, you know, show the sensors from that other application I'm using. I can put up the weather. You can put up, you know, CNN or whatever it is you want.
So what about something like a smoke detector or a CO2 detector? What does it look like to integrate that? Are there any pieces of hardware out there that integrate nicely that do that sort of thing?
I would say not at this time. I'm not aware of any. I mean, lots of people are hacking things together and making them work, but there's no commercial products that integrate with this nicely. Most of the commercial products, they all want to use their own cloud. You know, they're all really locked into their own thing.
My knee-jerk reaction to that would be get an ESP8266 and get it to wire it to an output on the smoke detector or whatever your initiating device is, and then you would just basically program it like a little Arduino to send a command to ZoneMinder.
I'd like to say we'd really welcome integrations with commercial products, but no one's reached out to us.
Yeah.
Well, I see people in the chat room talking about it, and I know because I've done the same things. I've thought about it. The wheels are spinning in people's heads. Wait a second. If this does all of this cool stuff, I could just build a full fire and security system out of this. Smoke alarms and detect intruders and all kinds of stuff. Is that kind of on the horizon? That's it's something that you could do with a full integration, or is there just a lot of legwork for the end user to do before that could really work right?
At this time, there's a lot of legwork to do. It's all going to be very DIY. I'd really like to get into a lot of that stuff. I would like to say that long term, ZoneMinder will eventually integrate with all those kinds of systems. Right now, as I said, no one's reaching out to us to make that happen. So who knows when.
Now, is there support for, we talked about pulling inputs in, is there support for going the other direction? So what comes to mind is integration with something like Asterisk. So that an event happens and you've got some code inside the server that says, oh, well, this is an important event. I'm going to call this phone number and report it. Does anything like that work yet?
That's actually interesting that you ask. I do have some clients who have expressed some interest for that feature. I haven't coded it up yet. We support a lot of things like emailing, SMSing, various actions. And our new version will do things like move events to offsite storage, et cetera. But we haven't gotten into the SIP calling yet. Our structure is such that you can do just about anything. You can run random commands with the information about the event. So with a little bit of scripting, just about anything can be done. But again, it's a bit of an uphill battle for anyone trying to make that stuff work. There's some work to be done there.
Yeah, there is the event server.
That's true.
Yeah, that's the developer of our mobile app, ZM Ninja. He's pretty much headed up that project. So I don't have that intimate details of how that works, but I know we have that thing called a ZM event server, which is capable of doing just that, sending events out of ZoneMinder to other applications.
And so I'll fill in the detail there because I actually use it.
Hey, all right.
The app in question, at least on Android, is something called ZM Ninja. And you can set it up, you can integrate it with your ZoneMinder install. And then whenever you get an event that you tell it to watch, your phone will actually ding at you and you can pull it out and hit it and get an immediate live view of what's going on. And so that is something that, right now with a little bit of work, it does. It works, and it's really neat. And I would love to see that. Last I checked, actually, that event server wasn't actually integrated into the main project. If I remember correctly, you have to actually go and add those files from his Git repository into your server. Is that still the case? Is that, or am I just remembering wrong?
It is merged into our master branch. It is. We haven't released that yet, but it is merged in. Yeah.
Okay. And then I hear you guys talking about the next version and the beta release. Is there another release on the horizon of ZoneMinder?
How does next week sound?
Next week would be great.
Yeah. Are you busy? I mean, we can put. but yeah. So we. I was gonna. I think Tuesday is going to be a little bit too soon. I've got another commitment I've got to attend to. Initially, I was thinking about that being the day, but so let's shoot for Wednesday. We're right on the cusp. We're basically down to a few minor issues and kind of deciding, do we want to address these small issues before we release, or we just want to just release and deal with them later? That's really the situation we're in right now.
Yeah, I think we sort of acknowledge that if we don't release soon, we'll never release. So we're just going to have to release then. Continue working on it. So soon.
And so what's new in the new? Well, first off, how long has it been since the last release? How long are we talking?
Let me look because I forgot. Let's see.
While Andy looks, let me say that a lot of the things that are in this release have been in development even while we were releasing previous versions. These were side branches. A lot of my work, so my corporate client, I have the server doing a number of cameras, want to add more, don't want to buy a new, big, powerful server. So I'd add another old server that I had lying around. So my work has been to distribute ZoneMinder across multiple machines and to deal with offsite locations, WAN links, et cetera. So the new release has all my work with that, which I call storage areas. So instead of the traditional, you have a single place where you store the video. Now you can have as many as you want. They can be local to individual servers that are doing the recording. there's an Amazon S3 type, all that sort of thing. So it's a lot more flexibility in how you store the video. You might have a really fast recent storage and more of a cold storage, and you move video from the hot to the cold in the background, that sort of thing. So a lot of work done there. The other big feature is that we will actually store H.264 in an MP4 container instead of just storing a million JPEGs. Now we're using.
So Andrew, why don't you jump in? And I'm assuming you found by now how long it's been. How long has it been since the last release? And then what things are you excited about that's new in this upcoming release, ideally next
yes.
week?
So it's been too long. May 9th, 2017 was our last release of 1.30.4. We've been in this kind of continual beta period of testing these 1.31.xx builds for quite a while now. And next week we plan to release 1.32.0. And that's when I need to remember how to push packages to RPM Fusion. So that's what I'll be doing next week. But what I'm looking forward to is what everyone else is looking forward to, being able to record to MP4 video container. And kind of what comes with that, you get this for free, is to be able to record audio. You know, local laws aside, you know, you got to pay attention to that whenever you record audio. Isaac was describing his multiple storage paths feature, which previously ZoneMinder would only be able to read and write from one storage path. And so you could kind of work with that. You know, since it runs on Linux, you can do little tricks, symbolic links, and mount storage locations elsewhere to kind of make that expand that. But what Isaac did here really makes it much more flexible and more intuitive to just go into ZoneMinder and set the whatever arbitrary paths you want it to read and write from. And of course, I mentioned this previously, the arbitrary, being able to configure an arbitrary website as a monitor. Not sure how many people are interested in that, but you know, I thought it was something I was interested in. So hopefully it's popular. If not, sorry, guys.
Well, it sounds like there'll be some, it'll be useful for some of those oddball, hey, I've got this other thing that I want to integrate into it, which sounds like that yep. was the sort of the original impetus for it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like a poor man's integration. So, if we can't get an API going between the two, well, hey, look, this has got a web front end, so you can just configure that as a camera, a non-recording camera, by the way. It's interactive, but it doesn't record, and just shows up right in ZoneMinder.
Hey, so I can't let Jonathan ask all the cool questions, so I'm going to talk about Uh-oh. Things that aren't as technical as a non-user of ZoneMinder. How did the project? How long has the project been going?
It has been going on since 2002. The okay. original author, Philip Coombs from the UK, started the project. It went, I'm trying to remember my dates here. So Kyle picked up the project. Kyle Johnson picked up the project and converted over to GitHub around 2007. And prior to that, mm-hmm. it had gone kind of cold for a couple of years. You know, I know myself included, we kind of just thought the project was dead. Then Kyle, you know, picked it up and wrote the API for the project. And that's when myself, Isaac, and a few other folks kind of hopped on board. And we've been working with it ever since, all the way up to the present day. And it's been a great learning experience.
And how many people contribute to it?
Quite a few. So right now there is only, well, it's Isaac and I are primarily doing the work right now, mostly Isaac. But over time we've had, we've had 100 contributors. It's really open source at its best.
Cool.
Yeah, people jump in with trying to fix the thing that they want to fix, and they contribute in the way that they can, and it's really nice. We try to foster that.
And do you find a gap between the kind of people who are using it and the kind of people who can actually contribute to the project?
Yes. it's tough. It takes a person who has a very strong desire to to learn something that they might not be familiar with. I mean, you don't have to be an expert in any particular language or anything, but if you want to contribute to the project, really just be willing to hang out with us, I guess, so to speak. You kind of get to build a relationship, get to know the team in our Slack channel, in the forums, et cetera, and then trying to kind of find something to kind of be your baby and just work on that and develop it. Yeah, and it really doesn't take any special knowledge. It just takes a really desire to do it. You know, be persistent. Don't give up.
And obviously some skills in the programming for the kind of stuff that you want to do and being in one of those languages. So you talked about the architecture earlier and also that there's a mobile app for it and you have some sort of mobile server. Does that mean that the other front ends are also using that same API that the mobile is using?
Right now, the mobile app is the only thing I'm aware of. No. There's a home. Oh, I forget the name. The mobile app is the only thing that I know that use. Well, yes, it does. But what is the name of that? It's like some home something something app. Boy, this name escapes me. I'll think of it when I'm not thinking of it. Isaac, do you remember the name of that home assistant? I think is the name of it. That uses the API?
No. I mean, you know, there's a plugin for Myth TV, although I think it's fallen out of date. I think there's a Kodi plugin, but again, I'm not sure how closely it follows our development releases. There's a lot of old mobile apps that don't work anymore because nobody was using them and we deprecated the way that they used to interact. But now ZM Ninja is the current mobile app, and it's pretty awesome. And it uses the API to communicate with Stoneminder.
And on the back end, you talked about using MySQL for your data and things. What kind of storage do you recommend for the recording the video streams?
I've used just about everything. For a while, I've tried to cobble things together with GlusterFS or there's UnionFS, things like that. Honestly, right now, I use EXT4 on local drives. I use either NFS or Samba to cross-mount them between servers. We do support Amazon S3 now, so you can store stuff in anything that's sort of Amazon S3 API compliant. Those are your options. I don't care what else.
There are a few pitfalls, especially if there's a new person starting out. I'd really recommend you stick with either like a local storage, use NFS. If you get into Samba, you've got to kind of watch it. I'm not sure if Isaac has finished working. We have a requirement for symbolic links. So if the underlying file system is not a Linux-type system, you can run into some issues. And I know Isaac was working on that, but I'm not sure if he's finished. I think let's just make that the recommendation, is stick with a Linux-type file system. Avoid the NTFS or anything else. Samba, you got to be careful because you still have to make sure you turn on symbolic link support in there to get it to work. And you know, iSCSI, NFS, or local storage would be the ones I would go with for a new user.
I just want to say, for almost any system, I recommend initial storage to a local device. Every time I try to store to a remote device, you'll get network lag issues, the network will go off, you'll lose that video. Store it to local, and then have Stoneminder move it to a remote source in the background. The moment you introduce a network storage, it gets flaky.
Okay. And then a purely stupid, silly question, since I don't know the UI of this thing. You know, all the security cam recordings I've ever seen anywhere in any movie and television show have not just one camera recording the video. They have like a four-quadrant camera. Can you make it do that?
So, no. Okay, so, well, I'm, I just thought of two things when you said that. I think you're talking about viewing a quad on the computer screen versus a camera that actually has four lenses inside the case.
Yes, the first, not the second, right?
Okay. But
I mean, so somehow there's a mix down so that for some reason all those always end up being the same video, I guess, so people can step through and watch it in parallel or something. I don't know. Or maybe a videotape was expensive back in the day. I don't know.
Yeah. So we've got what's called the montage view, which is basically does just that. You open up the window and you can put any number of cameras up to the maximum with an exclamation point that your system supports, and you can watch all of them live. We have another feature called montage review, which would allow you to simultaneously play back those cameras to watch recorded video simultaneously. So you can what's called scrubbing the video. You drag the mouse, drag it through the video, and you see all the events synchronously as they play out.
Okay. And I think I saw in one of the descriptions that you had something like a timeline graph with activity monitors spiking spikes. Is that a useful way to review the activity on a particular camera?
I like to use, that's called the timeline. I like to use that when you have a situation where there's multiple unwanted events going on. So like, for example, I've got the camera in my front driveway. When the sun comes up, the shadows come, you know, the sun goes behind a cloud, you know, those lighting changes, you can spend a great deal of time trying to eliminate those, but I tend to kind of go the other way, is just let it happen. And so you get these events intermingled with the ones you want to actually see. And so the timeline is a good way to kind of filter through those events and find the one that you're interested in rather quickly. Isaac, do you use Jez for the same purpose, or you've got another reason for using that?
I love timeline. I think I love the way the timeline works, because you can just quickly mouse over it and really quickly jump through time and get to where you want. And you have this visual representation of when motion happened and how much, and you can just mouse over really quick. I really love the timeline.
And I was a little distracted while Jonathan was working. I have an emergency on my company's computer, so I didn't actually get to listen to all that wonderful. I'll go back and play back the show now to see what's going on. So excuse me if this is redundant, but can you send out like run shell scripts based on events and cause it to trigger other sorts of responses, or maybe even invoke PagerDuty, things like that?
Yes.
So you can create a filter, and you can do basically a filter is kind of like a query, but there are some actions you can associate with the filter that whenever the filter returns some results, you can check the checkbox, execute arbitrary script. And then, of course, there's your hook to kind of write whatever you want to do, you know, to do what you need to do.
Okay, cool. And so we're sort of getting down towards the end of the show. So I also want to make sure I understand things like, so you said this is under GPL, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And is there any component of it that is like freemium, or is it all completely open source?
It is 100% open source.
Wonderful. And so what's your financial model? Are you planning on using this? Are you selling services, or is this a labor of love, or is it just cool? Are you just doing it anyway?
A little of everything. So I know Isaac has got a lot more, I guess, clients than I do. But we do kind of have our own side business model. So the software is free, but you can also hire us. We've got an LLC set up, so you can hire us, and we can charge for just our labor to set up the system. So Isaac's got some really cool stories. I don't know on how much detail he wants to get into. I know he's told us some. He's even got more.
Yes.
Yeah, I do with companies all over the world. I have companies that do with I have a company in the Netherlands that they watch their projects with earth moving and dike building and things, watching ships go by, and a lot of these companies use a variety of devices. In that particular case, they're actually using Odroids. And three cameras
to monitor a lock, let's say. So you have these ships going by. It's very fun to watch. I have a large company who I'll leave nameless that we took up to an 800 camera install. That's that took a lot of re-engineering to make Zone Minder scale that large. We have a number of clients in educational settings, in banks, all sorts of different commercial situations using Zone Minder very effectively.
Just
to get back to your question, although we get some funding, Zone Minder is both a labor of love for us, and we get a bit of funding to allow us to do it.
Here, Doug. All right. Is Zone Minder picking that up? Let's see. Anyway.
I wasn't quick enough to the mute button.
There you go. Detecting a dog. Exactly. There's definitely you have dogs. And I have a couple dogs here at home. Not me personally, but they're very tiny yip dogs, and they get really noisy sometimes when they get excited by each other. So on previous episodes where I've taped from home, we've actually heard the dogs on the track. So that's me. That's how it works. So what's on the roadmap? What are you still missing? What's your number one most critical thing? Is the roadmap visible? Can I contribute to it?
The roadmap is not visible. That's something that Isaac and I kind of need to work on to find a place to actually display it. We used to kind of use GitHub issues as a kind of a roadmap, but it got kind of hard to read between the roadmap items versus the bug reports and such. So and we kind of stalled out on coming up with a good alternative to where to put our roadmap. So a long answer to your question is we do not have a spot right now that you can go to see our roadmap. But I can tell you what some of the ideas are that we have in mind.
Sure.
So we've got the next step. So one of the features we've added previously, actually a contributor, a guy by the name of Jan from Germany, I forgot his last name, he added an OnBib probe. He just gave it to us. So great. That was a great contribution. So our system can now probe any OnBib camera and basically get all the parameters and auto-populate Zone Minder with the right configuration. So the next step to that is to actually try and use the OnVib protocol to do camera-based motion detection. Now, it's a little give and take. So the advantage is you've got a better scalable situation now, because if the motion detection is happening on the camera, you can just keep adding cameras and not worry about your server getting too busy. So that's a plus. But on the other hand, cameras tend to not be as good as Zone Minder is itself at detecting motion. So you get pick and choose your battles, but it is a valid feature that we would like to add someday. And it's just a matter of just sitting down and figuring out just how to add that additional support into Zone Minder.
Cool. All right. And what kinds of people are you looking for in terms of more contribution, particular skills, internationalization, technical writing?
Really, we could use a lot of help just doing documentation. This project is so big. It's bigger than any single person. And, I'm going to kind of do an honest thing here. On any given day, when I sit down and I think to myself, I'm going to work on Zone Minder, it feels overwhelming. I can spend a whole day just in the forums, and then I realize, oh, shoot, I was going to write this, I was going to work on the OnVib support and never get to it. And there's just so many individual tasks. We do have people helping us in the forums, but somebody to write the documentation would be a very good, a starter for somebody interested in the project and just wants to help out. Right now it's on a Read the Doc site. So it's and the way that kind of works is you just got to familiarize yourself with Markdown language, which it's scripting. It's pretty simple. You can Google it for a couple times and go, oh, okay, that's how you do that. And just kind of write the kind of update our documentation, because the next version of Zone Minder has a new front end brand new front end. It's brand new look and feel. And so we need to update our documentation, quite a bit of it. And boy, that would be a big help right there if somebody could step up and do that, help us out.
And is Kyle still with the project?
Not as much as he used to. He is. We're in touch with him. It's just, you know, it's kind of one of those things where real life got in the way. And so he's, we haven't seen him as much around, but we're definitely still in contact with him and hope that things change sometime in the future and he comes back to active development.
And I asked him a question that I'll now ask you, which will probably be just as embarrassing. Testing. How do you test this stuff and what kind of tests do you have?
You know, this gets into how do we, you know, what type of help do we need? So we're relying on our user base. We've built a build system in GitHub, kind of use Travis CI, and it calls Docker courtesy of another project called PackPack that kind of spits out packages. And so we're kind of using those packages and made them available to the end user to help test us. Help test ZoneMinder as we go along. And so that's kind of our model right now for testing, finding bugs and such. So, yeah.
So the Microsoft theory of using the user base as your test bed.
Yeah. When you've got more tasks than you have time, you kind of try to find good ways to distribute the workload. So, that's how it is.
Awesome. Hey, so one final question, which requires, unfortunately, set math. So of all the things we talked about today, is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to?
I did want to mention that basically another feature we want to do for the next version. So right now, when you stream ZoneMinder, due to browser limitations that came into play in modern browsers, you can only stream up to about 6 cameras live before the browser says, "Up, no more streams," and it just times out. So we need to reevaluate how we stream multiple cameras to montage the montage view that we talked about earlier to get around that. So that's going to be a feature that we need to develop for the next major version following the one next week.
And well, anything we left out? Isaac, go ahead.
Sorry, let me jump on that topic.
There's
a fix in the code that we're going to release. The problem is that it requires a pretty fancy Apache config. And I think what we're going to do in the next version is move away from an obvious, straightforward Apache setup and sort of embed our own browser and use an icon to sort of remove it from that complex Apache setup. And then simplify, how we access that, which is essentially an HTTP server, so that we can work around that problem. It's really a matter of just making the configuration easier.
Okay, cool. Two last questions for both of you. What's your favorite scripting language, and what is your favorite text editor? Andrew first.
Well, you're going to like this. My favorite language is Perl.
And, yay! Yay! A win. Yes.
I mean, whenever I sit down, I think what programming language thinks the way I do, or maybe it's the other way around. I think the way the original author of Perl think, or at least I imagine I do, because I look at that and go, that's exactly how I'd write that, just like that.
Exactly. Yep.
Anyway, so my favorite editor, I mean, I go old school. I use VI. Sometimes I use gedit, but that's about it.
Cool. And Isaac, same questions?
Yeah, same answers. Perl and Vim.
All right, at least another Perl. Two Perls. I'll count that as like 90, two 96. Wins. All right, excellent. excellent, sir. Well, it's been really wonderful talking to you guys. I hope this exposes ZoneMinder to a bunch more people that could either be users or help to have it happen. And thank you for taking your time out of your day, especially and scrambling at the last second to be able to be on the show this week. So I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been an experience.
All right. Good. That was Andrew Bauer and Isaac Connor talking to us about ZoneMinder. What did you think there, sir?
Very cool. I'm excited to hear the things that are coming out next week. Hopefully, I know how releases go. And then there's some other things that I have actually been bugging these guys about that has apparently made it officially to their roadmap, the OnVIF motion detection on the cameras. It's one of the things that I'm really looking forward to because, you know, like we said, you get one or two cameras and the next thing you know, you have nine cameras on your house. And trying to do motion detection on all of those with this little tiny network box just doesn't work very well. So
yeah,
I'm definitely looking forward to some of those things coming online and starting to work.
Yep. Yeah. And one of the questions I didn't ask, although I probably should have, was how do you feel about all those web cameras that are on the internet because they haven't changed their default access codes? But that's an unrelated question.
ZoneMinder doesn't necessarily fix that problem. I will tell you what I do. Well, no, it doesn't, but I'll tell you what I do. I create a second network that doesn't have internet access and put the cameras and ZoneMinder on it. And then it's good luck getting to my cameras. They can't even talk to the internet. Good luck, NSA. You can't look through my cameras.
right. Or and then you have password protected access to your ZoneMinder instance. So you can maybe VPN in or something to be able to get to that. That'd be pretty cool. All right.
I use WireGuard.
Well, right. Exactly. Of course you do. We're almost out of time. I want to run through the upcoming guests because the list is actually getting longer, which is always good. Next week. Again, an unusual time, a very special episode of PLOS Weekly because we're on a different time. We'll be on Thursday instead of Wednesday because there's this little company that has a $1 trillion market cap that seems to have an event next Wednesday. So I got bumped to Thursday. Same time, though. We're going to be in the morning again, not in the evening. As a show we just arranged, LibreOffice Online. So if you're familiar with LibreOffice, you can download it and run it locally. But if you've ever played with Office Online, where you get to share documents and stuff, it's kind of like Google Docs, things like that. LibreOffice Online is the same thing, but using open source software on behind the scenes, so that you can share all the kind of documents that you would bring down and download and stuff. So that's going to be really cool. Just added. Sanoid is after that. That is policy-driven snapshot management. Vaden, which is Java-based web development platform. Yes, even in 2018, we're talking about Java-based web development. Okay. Following that, Vicky Brasseur, an amazing woman. She's been contributing. She's going to be talking about her new book, Contributing to Open Source. But she's also – if you ever wanted like a generic open source show, I'm pretty sure this is going to come and cross all sorts of elements about that because she's talking about a specific project. There we go. English, please. It's late in the day. I'm getting a little tired already. It doesn't matter if it's early when I'm not awake yet. It doesn't matter if it's late and I'm already tired. So that's just the way it goes. Anyway, so that's going to be a great show. By the way, I think that is our 500th show. So that is so appropriate that Vicky Brasseur is going to be coming on our 500th show to celebrate open source of all aspects. So very cool. Sway, tiling, Wayland compositor, and drop-in replacement for the i3 window manager for X11, which to me are just a bunch of buzzwords. So hopefully somebody, my co-host on that show, is going to know a lot more about Linux and desktop systems than I would ever know. Open Rhein-Ruhr, which is a German open source two-day conference in early November. Monero is rescheduled, so they were canceled a few weeks ago or maybe just last week. I've lost track. Cryptocurrency, but private, untraceable, and fungible. Just added to the schedule, Tidelift. Tidelift gives maintainers and core teams, we call them lifters, a way to get paid for doing the work they love. Tidelift provides the tools and audience necessary for them to deliver a professional software experience. I got to reread their documentation. I'm not sure they actually are something that, well, they say they benefit open source people. So I don't know if it really ties in, but they're on the schedule now. So we'll see. We're going to make it happen. So that's who's on the schedule now. Go to twit.tv/floss, the homepage for this show. If you know of things that aren't on that list, please have the project leader or community coordinator email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, which a few minutes ago was not actually working. That was part of why I was panicked and distracted. Anyway, but it's working now again. We have a live stream normally at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, but next week it's Thursday, and this week it was Friday at 4 p.m., whatever. You can follow us. We did take questions from there, which is pretty good. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin on Twitter. I had a great time at Dragon Con, did my presentation, met up with a bunch of people I hadn't seen in a while, went to way too many parties. Probably walked something like 20,000 steps a day, which was my Fitbit was sort of screaming at me like, hey, you, it's only 10 o'clock in the morning. You already made your goal for the day. So it was kind of fun. I will be at All Things Open in Raleigh in October. I am I'm representing Floss Weekly there, but I'm also giving my Flutter talk. I gave my Flutter talk just last night at the Portland Linux User Group as well. I'll have that online in my YouTube channel soon. I'll be at Seagull, the Seattle New Linux Conference, in November. I'll be there as press. And KubeCon in December as press. Both of those are in Seattle, which means I get to visit my relatives on my way to and from there because my relatives live in Olympia up there. So that'll be fun. Anything you want to plug there, Jonathan?
Just mention you can follow me on Twitter at JP_Bennett. Other than that, I'm pretty much staying busy trying to get that house done, crawling around in the attic, laying down insulation, all kinds of fun stuff like that. Makes it tough to try to find time to go to conventions or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's my life, my schedule's just crazy. By the way, I came back from Dragon Con with Con Crud. There we go. Let's even use the right letters. And I was sick. I had stomach flu and headaches for like 2 days. And I'm amazed it, with the amount of places I go that there aren't more times that I get sick because I'm at, I spend 3 weeks a month either in airplanes or at airports or at conventions, things like that. So yeah, it's been pretty exciting. So I'm just lucky that it doesn't happen a little more often. Anyway, Jonathan, thanks for stepping in at the last minute and helping this happen and also co-hosting. That's really great. And that way we keep one show a week going and keeping our schedule. So thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's glad to be here.
Awesome, awesome. And it's good to have you back. You were gone. You were like not on like 6 or 7 episodes in a row. So I was sort of surprised after the number of times you were on a row. So it was kind of cool. Kind of cool.
Yes.
All right. Well, we got to get out of here. We'll see you all again next week, but on Thursday on Floss Weekly.